Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't Jackie, as you can tell. I think she's got a very bad cold. It's Alan, who Jackie phoned me up about an hour ago and asked me to stand in for her. She's got a guest there right now. Although next week she'll be on Monday, Tuesday herself, and I think she's going to talk about some information concerning World War One and the Lusitania. So I had nothing planned, of course, I never do. I generally just talk as to what comes into my head first. And one topic that was mentioned on the mainstream news last night was interesting, and that was the border crossings between Canada and the U.S. The news reporter, this is mainstream television in Canada, the main reporter was at one of the crossings, and I'm not sure if it was St. Catharines or down by Sault Ste. Marie, but it was, you could see the traffic flowing through without problems. And she mentioned that there was no real problems, but that some regular visitors were shying away and crossings had dropped because the people thought there was more of a hassle getting through either way. And then, of course, they brought in the ambassador to Canada from the U.S., and he said, well, he says it's going to be even easier shortly because with the new ID card, he says, you can just scan it through the machine and you'll be straight through, he said. This new ID card, which is to be mandatory by 2007, right now it's actually voluntary. The new ID card will have your iris scan. It's got an active chip in it. It has your DNA in it, recorded. Your voice print. Basically all information about you that you probably don't even know yourself. So you'll all be glad to know it's going to be so much easier to get through the border when they have everything about you on this card. And those people who've looked into the patent rights of cards, it's kind of like Monsanto with their seed. Monsanto is in the business of taking all seeds that have been around for thousands of years, and if no one's patented them, they're patenting them. So people who've had those seeds now have to pay Monsanto because Monsanto has the legal right, you see. And we know in this world, legality is everything in this system. Well, when you give your digital image to these people, they basically own your rights. So everything is on it. It's about you, even your DNA. I guess that means that legally they own your DNA as well. And I'm not joking about this. That's how insidious and weird the true esoteric legal system is. Now, I should mention today as well, this is the 25th of January, I think, 2006. And so there's about a year left for this mandatory, eventually, ID card to come in. And you'll all be so much safer and just buzz through so quickly. And it's all for our own good, of course, because we obviously don't know who we are. I don't know if they showed this in the United States. Probably not, because for the country that has more TV stations than anybody in the world, they certainly do keep you in a box in the U.S. And we have far, far more mainstream news about what's happening within the U.S. than you do in the U.S. When Mr. Bush and Mr. Fox and Mr. Martin from Canada signed the United Americas last March, it was shown here for at least 2 minutes on the CBC and maybe 3 minutes on Global News, but I don't think anybody showed it anywhere within the United States itself. And that was an official joining of the Americas. So having so much data from the media doesn't mean they're telling you anything that really matters. And certainly, of course, that's the trick of it all. It's the last thing someone would expect when you have such so-called free media that they're simply feeding you useless data and trivia generally, or propaganda, but seldom giving you any truth. And of course, whatever governments have done in history is always an exoteric for the public, and the esoteric, they sometimes give you the truth 50 years after an event, after the Official Secrets Act time has expired, and sometimes they won't. They'll reclassify it for another 50 years. For the free trade negotiations that were done back in the 80s, and they buried most of the contracts, really, between the countries involved. That was the precursor to NAFTA, and was actually more important than NAFTA, because preambles tell you the meanings of the words they'll be using in the actual official document, and they're very often very different from the ones you'd think they actually meant. So the free trade negotiations were classified and buried in some underground bunker outside Ottawa, and they won't be open for another 50 years or so. By that time, if there are still people around who can think, which I tend to doubt, to be honest with you, they'll gladly show it to you, because a future generation doesn't care what happened in ancient history. You know, 50 years today is ancient history, and with the Dewey system well underway in the school system, any real history has been pretty well chopped out, and it's hard to find a student today around 16 who knows when World War One began and finished, never mind World War Two, and who participated in it. And this is all by design, because they said that any conflicts that might go on down through the generations because of racial differences or whatever would have to be removed from the history books. And this has been going on under the National Educational Association, which is a part of the International Educational Association, and the whole world has been standardized to the same system under the United Nations. So we have lots of data to keep us occupied, but there's very little truth that we can use unless we really dig into it and use our own reasoning power, because the big boys will never come out and tell you what they've really done to you, what they are really doing to you, and what they plan to do to you. Since we are going along in a system which has been here for thousands of years, where they have good shepherds. Today they wear business suits. Sometimes in past history they wore uniforms, like Adolf Hitler and Stalin and so on. And we still have our friend in Cuba, of course. And through the uniform, which is one form, that's what uniforms mean. Masonics make one form out of many, one, you see. And one system, one world, all of this kind of stuff. You'll find that in our minds we expect to see dictators or tyrants in a uniform who yell and scream at their audience and gesticulate with wild gestures like Mussolini. And that's why they keep showing us these old cuts every so often. They seem to crop up all the time, and that's to condition us this way. And so when we see a guy in a business suit, you see, who doesn't yell and scream, at least not publicly, we can't see him as being a dictator or a tyrant, and it's very misleading, because they can say things much, much worse than any tyrant has ever said publicly, in a nice, gentle way, and the viewers simply are not conditioned, or they're deconditioned, not to actually see what they're seeing or hear what they're hearing. I think Mr. Bush himself said that the Constitution of the United States was just a piece of paper, which is odd, because I'd said that on Jackie's show back in 98, and it is. No piece of paper can stand up and demand your rights. It's the people who back it and who want that to be so, who make it so. And if they don't care, well, they don't care. It is a piece of paper. That's the reality of the world we live in. But the good shepherds, as I say, who run the world, and it's not the front men we see, the shepherds, the true shepherds, seldom go amongst the sheep. They pay their front men to do that, and of course the sheep like the shepherd. They think he's a good guy. He wears a business suit. Even the one in communist China wears a business suit. So these shepherds wear business suits, and they have nice scripts because they have the best script writers in the world, who must have a common education from some strange underground university, because they all advise their front men in the same speeches and to pass the same laws worldwide at the same time. And yet we never hear how come these advisors, who are unelected of course in any country, we never hear how they get these positions or who trains them and who authorizes them to be where they are. But they do write good speeches. They're Hollywood type scripts, right down to the pauses that the presidents and prime ministers make. Even the little jokes you sometimes tell, as anyone who watched the movie Wag the Dog, I'm sure saw. So, we're living in Disneyland, really. Very much so. And it isn't simply because we've woken up into Disneyland. Disneyland was here long before Disney. The ancients knew, and anyone who studied the history of India, ancient history, will come across certain princes who moved into India. These are the ones who did call themselves the Aryan race, whom the Brahmins supposedly are descended from. And they moved into the Dravidians, the name given to the people who were originally there. And they knew which religions to use for the particular people they took over. You'll find fantastic planning going in to the creation of religions specifically tailored for the inhabitants of different areas of India, according to the culture they had at that time. They could actually adapt or tailor-make these religions to the people, or for the people, and the people would, in fact, obey them. They would obey all the rules they were given because it seemed fairly logical, the way it was presented to them. And the reason this formula worked then, and it works today, is that people are trained in one generation to listen today to experts. In ancient times it was holy men, and the holy men would be backed up with other priests, and they would actually go out amongst the people, teach one generation the set of rules, the reasons why they must obey the rules, because there was a deity either watching them invisibly all the time, or else, you know, they went into the reincarnation thing where you're poor and destitute because you chose to be so, and that's why you're in that position. But if you work really hard and lick my boots, and if you create anything at all, I want a cut off it, or I want a share of it through money. If you do these kind of things to one who's superior to you, you might just come back in a higher position the next time. And strange as it sounds today, these religions work very, very well for thousands of years for a small elite ruling group. And all they had to do was train one generation. And that's all they were taught. They couldn't read or write. They believed priests and monks and so on. And they had tailor-made religions given to them. Psychological warfare par excellence. Nothing could be improved upon for the last few thousand years. In the last 100 or more, actually, they've been using electronic backups and various other techniques, Pavlovian type indoctrinations, to make us linear thinking, as they call it. And linear thinking is the reason most people can't ever figure out what's really happening, even the ones who think they're waking up. They might catch on to the banking system, or the constitution's going down the drain, or we're amalgamating, or losing something, but they're still really in a higher level of level one reality, because this planet is far beyond simple changes that are happening today. It's far more occult than that. Sciences are used beyond the comprehension of most people, apart from the very, very advanced electronics which are used. There are other means of applying science or transmitting signals, we might say. And where they are scientifically, I don't believe it's just 50 years ahead. I think the proof in Francis Bacon's little essay on the New Atlantis, written in the late 1500s and published 1602, where he goes into Solomon's Island, which is actually Salomon's Island. It's a play on the word salmon for its red flesh, because the color of this agenda is always red. And Francis Bacon talks about, eventually, the last chapter, he talks about getting into the underground chambers or laboratories, where he saw something powering the underground facilities that gave off the light of the sun. Now, today we would say that's nuclear energy. And then, of course, he talks about going into another lab where they had a machine to control the weather and create hurricanes, storms, droughts, famines, and earthquakes, which sounds suspiciously like HAARP today. And going on from there, he goes into the genetically modified vegetable and animal area. He doesn't use those terms. He says where they take the most minuscule parts of life and work on them and create any kind of vegetable, or he said animal, and I presume human, of course, that's what you're supposed to come to yourself. And then they know exactly how it will end up when they first start the stages of planning. In other words, they weren't experimenting and doing it for the first time. So when you get these kind of clues from someone who was living in the 1500s, writing supposedly with beeswax candles, and the best form of transportation was sailing ships and canvas, or on land it was a horse and buggy. He's coming up with incredible stories which a crystal ball couldn't have told him. He didn't claim to be a medium either. So it would tell me that they had these sciences. And of course, to control the world for thousands of years, not just control it, but this world's been heading towards or along a set plan, a set agenda for thousands of years. It would tell you that they would never allow the general population to know how far ahead they truly are. So while the people of the Middle Ages were living in the Middle Ages, those who were controlling the Middle Ages were probably living, what we might say, in the 20 or 21st centuries with the sciences that they actually had. And so you get these kinds of proofs popping up. Lady Queensborough, who wrote about Freemasonry in the 1800s, talked about one of her friends, who I think was an ambassador, who went to the Grand Orient Lodge in France prior to the telephone, met the Grand Master. That's after, of course, Benjamin Franklin was the Grand Master of the Grand Orient of France. And they were having tea with a silver tea set, and he heard a ringing noise coming from the teapot. The guy pushed something, the lid came up, and he talked into it. And he says, "You'll never guess where I'm talking to." So it was some other country across an ocean. So the telephone was here, and by the way, it was probably cellular, because we don't think we had wires laid at that time. That came later on. So these things were reported and observed back in the early 1800s. Lord Rothschild was also reported to have his little ventriloquist box. They had cartoons in British newspapers, and that's what he always pulled out when he was making these big deals, such as taking over the Bank of England, because he just knew who'd won the battle before anyone else did. So he liked to talk to himself in this little box, you know. Of course, the official version is he had a fast fleet of clipper ships that got there before anyone else got the news, and then a horseman rode into London, told them who'd won. He dumped his bonds. Everyone thought that the British had lost, and then he bought them all up for peanuts. All very legal, and which is always a strange thing I've noticed in this system. No matter how corrupt they are, they tend not to break laws, because they write the laws so that they can do what they want, basically. Certainly very immoral. But then again, if we look at the rule book, which is the Old Testament, we have to admit that the old God blessed Jacob for conning his old father into believing that he was really the brother. So in order to get the blessings, the old father was blind and half deaf, and so he dressed up like his brother with the woolly or woolskin shirt, and got him his favorite bowl of soup and stew and so on, and he got the blessings, and he ended up supposedly being in charge of the 12 tribes, which doesn't mean 12 tribes at all, and Jacob didn't mean Jacob. Jacob was the sun, and the tribes were the constellations. That's really what it meant. And so he'd broken through into the light of the sun. He became as the sun, and that's the test of the very highest pinnacle of Freemasonry, when you hit 360 degrees, because that's what it takes to go around a circle. Anyway, we've been lied to, conned mightily for thousands of years. Every generation has been brought up to believe they're on the cutting edge. When they were dying like flies in factories during the Industrial Revolution in Europe, when the plague carts went around to collect the dead who died of overwork and malnutrition, often for working 16 hours per day, including Sundays, by the way. The day off on Sunday came much, much later. But the people in those days thought, what else could they do? It's just the way it was. That's how we've evolved, as they would say in Darwinistic circles. You can help the poor so much, but what else can you do for them? What they don't tell you is that Mr. Rothschild, once he'd taken over the Bank of England, and personally I believe he was brought in by the elite already in Britain to run it more efficiently, when he was created Lord Rothschild, he passed the Corn Laws Act, where they could bring in foreign corn and so on and dump it on the British market. It put all the tiny landowners out of business. They were forced then to go into the cities, because that's where they wanted them, so they could work the factories. And everything happens, you find, in this order. There's no happenstance to anything. The people are coerced. The world is pre-planned. The destiny of the world is pre-planned then as it is now. And whatever you think is happening now, you're generally wrong. The media's job, the media means the middle. You see? Pyramid is, of course, fire in the middle, too. It's a fire between the capstone and the rest of the world, meaning the body. And the media's job is to communicate certain data to you to shape your mind on an ongoing basis into expecting the next move, which will seem perfectly natural to us by the way it's explained. The fact that, for instance, the New American Century published their agenda in the 1990s, beginning with an attack on Afghanistan, then Iraq, then Iran, and then Syria, in that order. And the fact that we did hit Afghanistan first, after 9/11, the emergency number, coincidentally, of course, and then go into Iraq. And then, and during the inquiry, Mr. Bush did admit on Canadian television, at least, that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with the Twin Tower bombing. He was just a bad guy that was in the way, and the world was better off with him removed. And now, of course, they're beating the war drums for Iran. I'm sure they have their own man in Iran, because each time he says something about the New World Order or Israel, I'm sure the population are quivering in fear, because why would a man bring on disaster when the world's biggest army is right next door to him, ready to move in? Why would he do this? Until you realize that the old Hassassin, the assassins, it's called Hassassin, and that's where the word hashish comes from, since that's what they basically lived on. That was in the Middle East. And the Knights Templars, in fact, joined forces with the assassin and became one. So I'm pretty sure this guy who's in charge of Iran, and who's making these big noises right now at the most inappropriate time, is one of their own. And if anything does happen, I'm sure he'll be picked up and or smuggled out or one way or another before all hell breaks loose. And you'll find that's how the game truly is played, because wars, as Mr. Carl Quigley, Professor Carl Quigley said, are not intended simply to beat another people. They're primarily to change the culture of all the participants. So it's the little people who have to change in the aftermath of war. It changes the culture, such as Britain, when it came out of World War II, it went into World War II to fight National Socialism and ended World War II as a National Socialistic country. That's how it changed it. The big boys understood that that was their goal. It's hard for the average person to ever figure out how it happened, how it came about, because that was the plan in the first place. Hitler wanted a united Europe. Winston Churchill, we're told now with declassified documents by his personal secretary, 50 years after the Official Secrets Act is up, Churchill spoke many times about a united Europe coming out of World War II. So regardless who they decided to win, you'd have got a united Europe anyway. So it's the sheep who must be conditioned for the changes, not the people who lead us to the changes, but the people themselves. And I hear the break coming up, so I'll keep quiet now while the music plays when it comes on. I may have a minute left here. So anyway, Jackie will be back next week, as I say, on Monday and Tuesday, and I think she's going to talk about the Lusitania, which when sunk helped to get the United States eventually into World War I.